Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 47. It's day before Thanksgiving. My co-host, David Todd, is traveling down to see some friends for the holidays. So back in the chair is up from the practice squad once again. He always does good work for us. Nick Rakitta back with me today. Nick, how you doing?
Doing great, Dave. Glad to be back on.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you a day early here. And I guess you're going to be looking forward to eating some turkey and hopefully watching another bird get destroyed Thursday night.
Oh, no doubt. I'm going to be destroying my own bird, and then hopefully the 49ers can wax up on the Ratbirds for us.
I agree. Let's start off with that. We talked a little bit before we got on. I don't think either of us are really that confident that the 49ers can travel out east and get the job done. You know, why don't you share a little bit of your thoughts of the 49ers-Ravens game before we get into some Steelers stuff?
Well, you know, like we were saying before, I don't know if the 49ers are contenders or pretenders yet. I mean, we know what they got in Frank Gore. They got some good skill position guys in Michael Crabtree and Vernon Davis. Their defense is playing very well right now. Great linebacker play they're getting from guys like Navarro Bowman and Patrick Willis. Even their secondary is looking good. Carlos Rogers has been one of the top corners in the league this year. And other than that, they look great. But like me and you said before, we're not high on Alex Smith. You know, this was a guy that was almost out of the league a couple of years back, and now all of a sudden he's the savior there in San Francisco. But I think he's kind of putting a haze over everybody's eyes. He's not really doing all that much. He's being efficient when he needs to be. But I don't know if coming down the stretch there, you know, with 2 minutes left in the game and you're down 6 points, I don't know if I want Alex Smith taking snaps behind center to go win me a football game.
Yeah, I have been impressed with their defense. I mean, Patrick Willis, I mean, let's face it, this guy is arguably the best inside linebacker in the league right now. And, you know, with their offense, they're going to have to run the ball with Frank Gore, I think. And like you said, putting the ball in the hands of Alex Smith, and I think I read a little bit of something about Crabtree's having some injury problems still. And, you know, outside of Vernon Davis at tight end, really most people can't really name their wide receivers, you know, on that team. So, I think with stopping the Ravens, like we talked about before we got on, I think they've got to shut down the run. I think the Ravens want to run Ray Rice. I think they know that if they get away from that run, they have what happened to them against the Seahawks and against the Titans earlier in the season and all. And I think they got to force Flacco to beat him. And, you know, Flacco's proven he can beat the Steelers this year, that's for sure. But that's how I would kind of attack that game. And I'm with you, man. I'm hoping the 49ers, you know, stun everybody here and prove that they are who we think they are and live up to their record there. But I'm not totally convinced. And, you know, we'll be hearing about this all day tomorrow with the you know, there's going to be, in case anybody who's listening didn't know, John and Jim Harbaugh are brothers. and I don't think that they've gotten that out enough. And, of course, I'm having some sarcasm in there, and I expect tons of that stuff being jammed down our throats with our turkey tomorrow. So let's get into a little bit about the Mike Tomlin held his post-bye week press conference yesterday. We didn't learn too terribly much. There were some questions that got asked, though, that I was glad to see get asked. I'll start kind of with the injuries and all. Ben Roethlisberger, as we all know, has that right thumb fracture and all like that, and he's going to be wearing that splint and glove type contraption that he's worn in the past when he's had this injury. Tomlin doesn't expect that thing to bother him. I'll get your thoughts on this. I mean, I still have a little bit of concerns anytime you're dealing with a throwing hand and not knowing what degree of the injury is. Really, I mean, let's face it, though, Ben likes to have this John Wayne type attitude coming into a nationally televised game Sunday night against the Chiefs. What's your view on the Roethlisberger injury?
Well, right when the news broke, I sent out a tweet and I said, in breaking news, Roethlisberger breaks his thumb. And in other breaking news, water is wet, grass is green, and the Ravens still suck.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of sums it up. I mean, Steeler Nation has seen Ben before get hurt. The guy plays with, you know, he's already played with a busted up thumb, busted up hand, busted foot, broken nose. I mean, he's battered and bruised, but he's our fearless leader, and I wouldn't expect him to be out. You know, when I heard that, you know, he broke his thumb, and then it said, but he expects to play in KC, I was like, well, what else is new? I think he's going to be hindered a little bit. You know it's going to hurt him. You know he's going to be wincing. He's probably going to get another injury in that game because he's always seems to get busted up in every single game. But, you know, that's just Ben. It almost seems like when he's injured, he starts playing better. And when he's under duress, he thrives on that pressure. And he thrives on the fact that people are going to tell him no and people are going to, you know, doubt him. And I just think that's Ben. And that's the kind of quarterback he is. And I think he plays better when he's like that.
Yeah, in fact, Scott Brown just put something up on Twitter here today. We're recording this about 1:30 in the afternoon. The injury report's not out, and the team's about to practice. They're having interviews with some of the players right now. Ben said that he and the team docs have been tweaking the splint that will protect his broken right thumb to make it as hinder him as little as possible. And that's from Scott Brown on Twitter this afternoon before the Steelers take the field. You know, and one thing I was listening to the Bob Labriola, Mike Suda Talking Steelers Football podcast that they put up on Steelers.com. They have that, I think, three or four times a week. Listening to that last night. And Ben does not hide his injuries. You know, a lot of players will try to play coy with it so not tip off the other team. And as they were talking last week, Ben was walking around with that stimulus on his thumb and for all to see. And Ben likes this stuff. And he knows it's a nationally televised game. He knows all the talk's going to be about him and his thumb, and he's going to go, you know, his goal is to go out and throw for another 300 yards, two touchdowns, blow out the Chiefs and all like that. So, you know, I'm cautiously, you know, guarded a little bit, you know, just because it is a thumb injury. But you know, the Chiefs team that we both watched play the Patriots, when was it, Monday night, and really looked bad, you know, really on the offensive side of the ball. I don't think it's going to take too many points to put these guys away as long as Ben doesn't turn the ball over here. So I think we agree that there's not much worry there heading into this game. Some of the other guys that Tomlin mentioned, Lamar Woodley, he's working in a limited capacity this week. I really, really would be surprised, Nick, if he plays Sunday night against the Chiefs. I've been on this since the day after he went down with this injury against the Patriots, the hamstring injury, of course, that there's no way he should be brought back until the Bengals game. And David and I talked about it the other day. If he's not 100%, he should not be on the field, in my opinion.
No, and I completely, completely agree with you. As soon as you see a guy go down like that, when a guy's running and he goes down by himself, you know, like Andre Johnson did, you know it's going to be a serious injury, because when a guy's not touching, he just goes down, it's always rough, and you're always sitting there wincing, hoping for the best. But as soon as he went down, you know, I agreed too. I didn't think he should be brought back until he's 100%, especially with a hamstring injury, because even if you're at 95%, you know, one false move is going to strain that hamstring again, and then you could be out, you know, for another how many weeks, or, you know, even something even worse where he would be out for the playoffs or something like that. And that's just not something you need. And against a weaker team like Kansas City, I just don't think there's any reason to bring him back. You know, we're going to be getting into this playoff stretch here soon. And with teams coming up like the Bengals again, and even the Browns twice, and the 49ers coming up, there's just no reason to bring them back against a team like KC that you should be able to beat them, you know, without a guy like Lamar Woodley.
And, you know, imagine the criticism, how much under fire Tomlin and the staff will be if he is to be not at 100% and come back in this game and to re-injure it and miss the next three or four games because of it. It's just a risk that you can't take. And I think we agree on that. I'm going to be really surprised if he goes. And the first injury report of the week, the Wednesday injury report, will be out probably in a couple of hours. It'll be out before this is posted up for you listeners. So make sure you check SteelersDepot.com for the Wednesday injury report, you know, after you or while you're listening to this podcast. Emmanuel Sanders is another guy that, you know, coming off that arthroscopic knee surgery that he had a knee cleaned up there after the Patriots game after his mother passed away the week after that. He's another guy that I just cannot, you know, I talked to Scott Brown last week, and, you know, he still had a little bit of a limp during the bye there, it seemed. So he's another guy I wouldn't expect back in the lineup either.
Yeah, and I agree, just like Woodley, there's no reason to bring him back yet. And with a knee, that's just as, you know, even more severe than a hamstring injury. So, you know, any false movement, he could go down again with the problems he's been having with his feet and stuff like that. There's no reason to bring Emmanuel back until he is 100% with his body in every single area. And especially with the way, you know, Antonio Brown and even more so Jericho Cotchery has been stepping up. It just kind of shows you how much we don't know as fans that we think we know. When the Steelers drafted Antonio Brown in the fifth round after they had just taken Emmanuel Sanders in the third that year, I was like, you know, what are we doing? Why are we taking another receiver? And then when they brought in Jericho Cotchery, I'm like, wow, you know, Jericho, he could be a third receiver on any other team, and now he's going to come in and probably be, you know, the fifth guy on our team. And it's just like, you know, something happens like this where Emmanuel goes down and Hines goes down, and it's like, you know, I'm not arguing with anything the Steelers do anymore. And with the way Cotchery's been stepping up, he has just been coming up huge. I mean, he's just a little bit bigger, faster version of Hines Ward. He's tough. He runs good routes. He's a savvy veteran. He finds holes in the zone, and he's a good possession receiver. And Antonio Brown has just been emerging and just being an absolute animal. He's a spark plug, and every time the ball's in his hand, you think he's just going to bust a big play. And then those guys have just been stepping up huge in the absence of Emmanuel. So when Emmanuel comes back, our receiving core is going to be even more lethal than it already is.
Yeah, I totally agree. Kind of mopping up this injury stuff. Troy Polamalu is still slowed by some rib discomfort. That should not be a worry at all. He's evidently, a source told me that the ribs have been bothering him for most of the season, so they've just given him some time off. I would not be surprised if he showed up limited on the Wednesday injury report today. The only other real injury I've noted is Arnez Battle, who has a right hamstring injury that he suffered in the game against the Bengals. So, you know, that's a guy to watch, especially as far as special teams go. Back to Antonio Brown. I was fooling around with some stats last night, passing stats, and came across Roethlisberger's first down stats through the first 10 games of this season, and was pretty floored by what I saw in that. Ben has not been good at all on first down this year, and coming into this season, it's been a down that he's kind of thrived on, because he's put up a 63.3% completion ratio with a very healthy 8.6 yards per attempts on first and tens. And then let me emphasize, this is the down and distance of the stats are on first down and 10. His passer rating heading into this season on that down and distance was 92.3. When you turn around and look at what he's done through the first 10 games this year, his completion percentage is 58.4, 6.3 yards per attempt. Five of his interceptions have come on his down and distance, and his quarterback rating 58.7. So, I went back and pulled the targets too, Nick, to see maybe who he was targeting in this. And Antonio Brown, surprisingly, has been targeted. I wouldn't say that's all that much surprise that he's been targeted 19 times, but he's only caught 7 balls, which is 30% completion ratio that way. Now Antonio has been on fire the last 4 weeks. In fact, heading into the games this past week, he led all receivers in receptions over the last 4 week period there. But even over that 4 week period, I went back and chased down those numbers. He was targeted 12 times on first and 10 and only had 5 catches for 46 yards. So for those that are ready to put maybe Hines Ward out to pasture on first down, or think that Antonio Brown has nailed down that spot, you know, when they use 2 wide receivers on first down, you know, let's not jump that far, you know, in advance real quick. I think Antonio needs to, I think there's still some communication problems there. We've seen him still run some bad routes and all at times and not be on the same page of Roethlisberger. I'm not discounting the play of Antonio Brown. He had some huge catches in that Bengals game, especially on that one drive where I believe he had 4 catches and 2 of them converted third downs there. But, you know, I'm not convinced that Antonio's ready to take over that number 2 spot, though.
Yeah, and I don't think so either. I think a lot of that, you know, him being targeted and not having so many catches or not a great completion percentage is going to be due to the fact of his age and how young he is and the camaraderie he has with Roethlisberger. I mean, you know as well as I do, it takes, you know, years for quarterbacks and receivers to build that trust with each other and know where the other person's going to be and know where the other person's head's at, you know, during a play. And I don't think Antonio's there yet. And I don't think any of the younger receivers, I don't think Emmanuel's there yet. It's just going to take time. And we just need to, you know, take it in stride and not get so frustrated and not try and not look into the stats so much. But one thing I don't want people to do is forget about Emmanuel Sanders. Everyone is talking about Antonio Brown, obviously, because he's playing and making these big catches and he's a spark plug. But Emmanuel Sanders coming in, he was the more polished receiver. He's a better blocker. He catches everything thrown his way usually, but he just has some mental breakdown just like Antonio too. So like I said, when Emmanuel comes back and he gets back in a full participation, you know, type role and he's finally healthy and not playing so spotty, I think him and Antonio are going to be battling for that spot because, you know, looking down the road, when Hines Ward does end up going and Jericho Cotchery, you know, is not a very young guy either. I think he's, you know, 29 years old. You know, if you got a guy like Mike Wallace and Emmanuel Sanders on the outside and then Antonio Brown in the slot, I don't really know how you can cover those guys. I just don't want people to forget about Emmanuel because he's actually probably the more polished receiver.
And, you know, Hines Ward, you know, Tomlin kind of brushed off the talk again yesterday about Hines Ward and how he's going to be used going forward and all like that. Ed Bouchette's been beating the drum pretty hard on his blog and some of his articles that Hines kind of deserved better than this. And I stated in previous podcasts that I just don't think, and in a post as well, that I just don't think Hines is healthy right now. But, you know, he's had this week off and all, and Tomlin's kind of setting us up here for Hines to play, you know, assuming he is 100% healthy this week, setting us up for Hines to be a little bit more involved than he was last week against the Bengals and you know, possibly having a game like he did against the Titans back in week five there. You know, Hines is not the same player. You know, I think we all can agree with that. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to run away from people. But I also, you know, I think he's going to play a huge role heading down the stretch here. And you know, even if he doesn't, he's going to be in some key situations, three and four wide receiver sets. I fully expect to get him to get the numbers that he needs to bust the yardage and the receptions that he needs, the goals this year. Although we could be looking at his final year based on his contract going forward with the Steelers. I think there's a lot of, you know, that's a whole podcast in the future that we can debate on that. But, you know, and Jericho Cotchery coming on too, you know, it's going to be interesting to see the personnel stats, and you're the one that tracks my offense for me after the game, so you'll be able to talk more closely to this after we start breaking down this game. But it's going to be interesting to see how Hines Ward is used as long as he practices fully this week and does not show up on the injury report.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, that I'm charting the offense and stuff. Hines' numbers have definitely been down, you know, and I think it's more of a testament to how his body's feeling and how he's responding to injury right now. Hines is definitely not 100%. We know Hines is going to go out there with a concussion, with a broken foot, with a bad hamstring. You know, if the doctors tell him, you know, hey, you can play this week, or you're not fully healthy, but you can give it a go, you know Hines is going to give it a go. And even if the doctors tell him, Hines, you probably shouldn't play this week, you should probably rest it, Hines is going to say, well, doc, I'm going to play anyway. So, you know, I think, like you said, it's more of a testament to, you know, is the injuries he's having. He's definitely not 100%, you know. He's not going to run away from you so as it is, and with, you know, a bum, you know, hamstring or whatever, or, you know, concussion symptoms, you know, he's definitely not going to be the same Hines that we're used to. But he still finds the holes. He still comes up with the big catches on third down. He's still fiery. He's still a leader in the huddle. And as far as respect goes, I mean, Hines is a team guy, you know. He's just like any other player in the National Football League. You want to get your touches. You want to be out there helping your team. But I think Hines understands that, you know, he's getting older and his role is going to start, you know, diminishing to his playing time on the field. And it's going to start, you know, upping in the area of helping these young receivers, you know, learn the ropes and learn how to run routes and, you know, learn how to be a team player. And I think that's going to be Hines' role kind of coming down the stretch a little more. But he's still going to get his touches. He's still going to get his catches. And we're still going to love him when he makes that big first down, gets smashed, and gets up smiling.
Amen. A couple other notes wrapping up kind of what Tomlin said yesterday that we learned. I mean, Tomlin once again praised Jason Worlds in a way that only Tomlin can do, basically saying that he has played above the line while filling in for Lamar Woodley. It's good to see him get some snaps on the field. He'll quiet a lot of the critics if he's able to get a sack or two this week against the Chiefs, which I'm kind of rooting for in that because, like we mentioned, I don't think Woodley's going to play. So this will be his third game probably starting. It's time. The training wheels are off now. There's no reason for him not to perform above the line going forward here. Another player that I kind of, flying below the radar here that I was glad to hear Ed Bouchette talk about this is Cameron Hayward, our first-round draft pick from this past year. We saw against the Bengals that this was the first time that Cameron Hayward did not receive a snap on the defensive side of the ball. And Tomlin was asked about that, and I had brought this up, of course, in a participation report that I did and talking to Scott Brown last week as well. Tomlin wrote it off as saying, it's a result of Brett Kiesel and Ziggy Hood being, highly conditioned and playing well. He claimed that he has no reservations about playing Hayward and that they're not worried about him as far as a snap count and a developmental standpoint. But Tomlin could have just stopped there, but he went on to say that, they'd been playing quite a bit of sub-package football lately with two defensive linemen on the field and trying to pawn that off as a reason. Well, when I go back and I look at the defensive snap participation charts that we've done for the last 2 weeks against the Bengals and the Ravens, the Steelers have not been playing a lot of sub-package football. In fact, we've seen the nose tackles on the field quite a bit more the last few games. When they're going sub-package, it's been mostly nickel ever since the Patriots game where they played a lot of the dime there. And, I'm not convinced we got an honest answer from Tomlin there because there was plenty of snaps, plenty of opportunities to get Kiesel off the field for a few downs. in especially the Bengals game, and he didn't do it. And although I think Kiesel's been playing lights out, my only concern with that is wearing him down, a veteran like him wearing him down through the middle portion of the season here and, not getting Hayward some snaps. So hopefully Cameron in this game against the Chiefs, hopefully we blow him out and Cameron Hayward can get on the field for about 14 or 15 plays.
Yeah, it'd definitely be nice to see Cam get a few snaps in there and get some recognition and a little bit of playing time. I think, it might be more to the coaching staff getting a little greedy because of the way Kiesel's been playing and because of the way Ziggy's been playing. It's like, you always want to keep your best personnel out there on the field. And like you said, both of them, especially Kiesel, have been playing lights out. So it's like, how do you bring a guy like that out of the game if he's not tired or if he's well-conditioned and he's still ready to go? You want to keep your best player on the field. But I don't think there's, a major, huge drop-off from Cam. Obviously, Cam Hayward is not Brett Kiesel right now. But Cam Hayward's a solid, solid player. Even though he's a rookie, he's still got the physical tools. And if you tell him, go blow up a tackle or go stuff the run, I think he'll be able to do it. But, I think it's just coming down to greed a little bit. And maybe they need to get Cam his snaps or maybe they need to allow Kiesel to get some breathing room and some time on there on the sideline, but I don't know.
You think I'm reading too much into this?
Not so much. Maybe a tiny bit, but I don't think it has anything to do with Cam, if he's practicing bad or, been having some bad snaps there in games and stuff like that. I think it's just more so coaching staff wanting to keep their two best, defensive ends that they have right now on the field. But, with Aaron Smith being out and your top three guys being Kiesel, Ziggy, and Cam, I think you're right. I think you do have to get Cam some snaps. So going forward, it's going to be interesting to see if they do get him on the field a little bit.
And the thing, if this was Ziggy Hood like we were talking, like last year, Ziggy was more of a defensive tackle type that was projected to be a five technique type outside guy. He can play both kind of inside and down outside, not so much when he was at Missouri. So I expected the development of Hood to be a little bit slower as he kind of learned the five technique and the Dick LeBeau scheme. You know, Cameron Hayward, you know, he played, you know, in a 3-4, you know, at Ohio State. Not exactly the same scheme as Dick LeBeau runs, but a lot of similarities there. I just would have thought that the transition would have been a little bit, you know, quicker for him, I guess, is what I'm saying. And by no means is just giving Ziggy Hood five or seven snaps, do I think, I mean, I think that's plenty, 5 to 7 snaps. I just found it curious that he had been getting, you know, a pretty, you know, kept along the same lines of a snap count through the first 9 games of the season. Then you turn around against the Bengals and he gets zero. And maybe, you know, we don't know the full answer on that, but it's going to be interesting to watch against the Chiefs this Sunday night going forward and on. And by no means do I think Cameron Hayward's a bust or anything like that. Yeah, I just am more worried about Brett Kiesel's overall health going forward by not getting him some snaps off the field.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You know, they do need to get Cam some snaps. And like you said, not so much for Cam. You know, he needs to develop and he needs to get his snaps in there to be able to get some playing time and some real game time. But coming down the stretch, you're going to need Brett Kiesel in the playoffs. He always comes up big in the playoffs. You know, he's a leader out there on the defense, and you definitely need him more so than Cam Hayward coming down the stretch. So you definitely want to keep him fresh and try and keep Ziggy fresh too, because Ziggy's body can handle more right now just because he's younger. You know, Brett Kiesel has seen a lot of time in the National Football League, and, you know, especially the past few years since he's become a starter. And, you know, he's you know, how old, 32 years old is he?
I don't have that in front of me, but I mean, he's on up there. Yeah. He's a 30 club member.
Yeah. So he's, you know, he's got an older body, an older frame, and you definitely, you never know when that body could break down or give out or start, you know, really getting war on. So you definitely want to get Cam his snaps, not only for Cam, but definitely for Kiesel as well.
Kiesel is 33. And wrapping up, Tom, and he gave a good praise for Steve McClendon, basically saying that right now he's the backup to Casey Hampton moving forward at nose tackle. And that probably means Chris Hoke probably going to be possibly inactive for a couple games going forward here, and we'll see how that moves going forward. We got the Chiefs Sunday night. What scares you the most about the Chiefs?
I think the only thing that really scares me is their defense. I'm not really worried about them on offense. I think Tyler Palko, like Tomlin said in his press conference, he's good above the neck, but I just don't know if he has the physical tools to be able to get it done and get the ball out quick enough and hard enough to hit his receivers. And as far as the run game goes, they're going to be relying heavily on that run game. And if the Steelers stop the run like they're supposed to, then there's no reason why their offense should be totally stalled by our defense. So I think the only thing that scares me a little bit is their defense. They haven't been playing up to par, you know, lately with the guys they have in Tom Bahali and Derek Johnson and guys like Brandon Flowers and stuff like that. They have a lot of good names, but they haven't been playing, you know, up to snuff lately as a team. So you just never know what defense you're going to get. You could either get, you know, a terrible defense like they show sometimes, you know, like they showed in the second half or later in the game against the Patriots. You could get that team where Tom Bahali is unblockable and Derek Johnson's flying over the field and Brandon Flowers has 3 picks. You just never know what you're going to get. So it's pretty much we're going to be able to see come Sunday night which Chiefs defense comes out, and I think that's the only thing we really got to be worried about.
Yeah, Tom Bahali has 7 of their 12 sacks, I believe. So it's no wonder Tomlin highlighted him yesterday in his press conference. I think, you know, they're going to move him around a lot. So Max Starks will see him. Marcus Gilbert will see him. Max Starks has played great, I mean, this year and handled Suggs great a few weeks ago. Marcus Gilbert's had his problems this year, but, I mean, very, very serviceable. I'm really, really happy where he is from a pass protection standpoint. His run blocking has been good, blocking down on the defensive tackles, teaming up with Ramon Foster thus far. So I think Tom Bahali is definitely the one to watch. I think you have to make their linebackers play in this game as well, too. I really have not been overly impressed with the linebacking crew. I think their secondary is vulnerable as well. They did a good job of not giving up the big play the other night, except Gronkowski, it seemed like, there on that yard, on that big run that seemed to be a miscommunication there. But they did a good job of kind of shutting down Wes Welker in that game. Obviously, the Patriots just don't have the same receiving core as far as receivers go that the Steelers do. So, you know, that their focus will probably be to take Mike Wallace away like every other team has tried to do this year. But with Ben and this thumb and splint, I expect a lot more shorter, quick passing game to get the ball out, a la kind of like we did against the Titans. We'll rely a little bit more heavily on the run. I think you're going to see Ben in the pistol formation and the shotgun a little bit more, and not so much under center. But make no mistake, this is a national televised game. If you think the Steelers are going to run the ball 35 times in this game, I just don't see it. I think this is a game that Ben tries to throw, you know, like he likes to throw. I think he wants to win this game and show everybody on national television that he can play through this other bump and bruise.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, it's all going to come down to, you know, game time. I really don't think you can speculate on much. It's all going to be how Ben's thumb is going to react and how the game's going as to what they're going to do. I mean, I could care less about pleasing millions and millions of fans with a shootout and Ben throwing for 500 yards and 6 touchdowns. If we run the ball 50 times this game, Rashard Mendenhall has 4 yards a carry, Isaac Redman has 4 yards a carry, and we grind it out and win the game, you know, 21-0 on 3 rushing touchdowns, I don't really care what everybody else thinks. But like you said, it's a nationally televised game, and I think they're going to come out and do what they need to do to win the football game no matter what.
Yeah, and, you know, I expect some good balance there. I mean, Bruce Arians, for all the criticism that he takes, I think he's had a good year calling plays. I really like what he's been doing with the bubble screen this year. I think we'll see more of that in an attempt to get the ball out of Ben's hands a lot quicker here. And you know, the thing that we can't have happen is we can't let the Chiefs hang around and have what happened a couple years ago with them on the road and end up, you know, Ben got knocked out of that game with a concussion. Charlie has to come in and finish it up. The Steelers, you know, a game they easily probably should have won. The Chiefs ended up knocking them out, and that can't happen, and that's got to weigh heavy on their minds this go-around.
Yeah, definitely. And spinning off that bubble screen, I think there's going to be chances now where, you know, in the beginning of the year, we were trying to hit the long ball a lot, and now they started taking that away, and now they're giving us that short stuff like that bubble screen. Has been working great to Mike Wallace lately. As soon as he gets a ball in his hands, his acceleration and speed, he's just blowing by everybody. And I think soon down the stretch, you're going to start seeing opportunities for the long ball to open up again, and it might be this game. The only thing that could hinder it, I think, is Ben's thumb. I don't know how much that's going to hinder his ability to throw the football, but it seems like lately, as good as they were on the long ball, Ben and Mike hooking up, they kind of started to fizzle out a little bit, and I don't think it's Mike's fault. I think Ben's just been overthrowing them lately, and sometimes I think Ben gets in the mindset that I'm going deep on this play, and no matter what, I'm just going to hope Mike Wallace runs by somebody. And now with this bubble screen coming in, I think they're going to be able to, you know, maybe fake that bubble screen a bit and maybe take a shot down the field. But we're going to see what's going to happen. It's all going to be based on how Ben's thumb is going to feel.
I agree. And for those listening to the podcast, well, I've got another interview scheduled on the back of this, with Josh Loney, the KC Chiefs beat writer. So stay tuned for that. Nick, you got any closing thoughts?
I don't think so. I'm just hoping we're going to go out and take care of business like we do. Like you said, we gotta go out and finish games. Too many times we get out in front and allow teams to get back in. And I don't know if it's they're getting too comfortable, if they're getting a little cocky. But when you take a 14-point lead in the first quarter, you need to go out and blow out a team 42-0, because I'm sick of this coming down to a sushi field goal and me holding my breath and getting ready to, you know, chop my head off because I don't know if he's going to make the damn thing or not. So I just think they need to, you know, go out and continue to stay on the throttle, you know, put the boot on the neck and finish teams off.
Nick, I certainly do appreciate you sitting in today. That's Nick Rakitta, Steel City Kid 117 on Twitter. Nick, thanks. Happy Thanksgiving to you a day ahead of time. Hopefully we're watching a Ravens loss to the 49ers tomorrow.
Yep, and happy Thanksgiving to you too. And Steeler Nation, don't eat too much. We need to watch a game.
And stay tuned for my interview coming up next with Josh Loney of KCChiefs.com. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. My co-host David Todd is away for the holidays. This is the second half of the show, and as promised, I'm pleased to be joined once again by another beat writer. We've been able to have a beat writer every week of the Steelers season thus far. And this week, the Steelers take on the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium Sunday night, prime time on television. And with me tonight is Josh Looney, the beat writer for KCChiefs.com, the official website of the Kansas City Chiefs. Josh, welcome to the Terrible Podcast.
Awesome, Dave. Appreciate you having me. And if it wasn't terrible before, it's going to be terrible now that I'm on. I love the name of this podcast. Love it.
No, in fact, you'll probably up the value of it. And and Josh, I tell you, I feel kind of blessed on a pretty newsworthy day to happen to have you on here today. The big news out of Kansas City Chiefs land today was they claimed Kyle Orton off waivers from the Denver Broncos. And, with the short week coming off the game Monday night the Chiefs had with the New England Patriots, I guess the question I need to ask first, is there any way whatsoever, is there enough turnaround time for Orton to start Sunday night?
You know, Dave, I really have no idea as far as that goes. What I do know is today, during the Chiefs practice, Tyler Costa was the number one quarterback. Now the Chiefs had their practice right when that 3 p.m. deadline hit, so obviously Orton wasn't available to come and be at practice today. Todd Haley has not addressed the media since he had a 2 o'clock press conference, so he addressed it right before the Chiefs claimed Orton and was pretty coy about his feelings regarding Orton, and obviously for good reasons. At that point, he didn't want to give away that they had a claim on him. I don't know. It is a short week, as you mentioned. I just felt there's some precedent in this league, in this division, really, with Carson Palmer and the Oakland Raiders. The Chiefs went in and played the Raiders the Sunday following Carson Palmer's trade, and that happened, I believe, on a Tuesday. It was a Tuesday or Wednesday before the Chiefs played the Raiders, and there was the big question, would Carson Palmer start? Would he not start against the Chiefs? And he ended up not starting, and Kyle Bowler throws 3 picks, and they put in Carson Palmer, and he throws 3 picks, and he comes in after the game and said, I didn't have enough time to prepare, and I knew about 3 or 4 plays, and since then the Raiders have taken hold of this division, even though it's still a tight division, the AFC West, and he's 2-1 as a starter, so he's much improved once he's had time to learn the playbook. So the Chiefs saw firsthand what a guy on short-term knowledge was able to do, so I don't know. If that plays into it, I'd say you'd see Palco, but there's no real official word at this moment. I'm sure we'll learn more as the week goes on.
Does Orton have any familiarity with Todd Haley's offense? I thought I read something with some ties somewhere in there dating back. Do you know anything about that?
I don't. Orton was, he was in Chicago for a brief stint, but it came after Todd was the wide receivers coach for the Bears. I believe Todd was in Dallas when Orton was starting his career with the Chicago Bears. See, Todd was there 01 through 03 with the Bears, and Orton came shortly after that. I don't know of any connections. Obviously, the two are very familiar with one another just from Orton being a division opponent for the Chiefs for the last several years for the Denver Broncos, and Todd Haley's gotten the upper hand of Orton a few times, and Orton's gotten the upper hand of the Chiefs a few times. So I don't know what the familiarity is like between those two.
You mentioned the Chiefs practice today. The injury report hasn't been posted yet. Can you update us on the health of the Chiefs coming out of that Monday night game with the Patriots?
Yeah, I still haven't seen the injury report down from our PR guys, and it's been a very newsworthy day. I know the Chiefs, all they did was a walkthrough today. The team plane didn't get in from Monday night until about 5 a.m. Tuesday morning, and yesterday was the player's scheduled day off, and a lot of them were in here getting a jump start on the Steelers, so there hasn't been a lot of time to recuperate. And the Steelers are on their bye week, and so the Chiefs just had a walkthrough today that was closed to the media, so I wasn't able to see anything firsthand. There were some injury situations going into that game. Glenn Dorsey missed the game because of a knee injury. He got banged up the week before against the Denver Broncos, and that's a pretty big loss for the Chiefs on the front line. He is a guy who's an every-down defensive lineman for the Chiefs, obviously a top draft pick a few years ago, and I know people outside of Kansas City may say, well, you look, the sack numbers aren't there. Glenn Dorsey is a very important part of this defensive line, and the people who follow the team closely and the fans here in Kansas City are well aware of that. We saw Amon Gordon, a guy who has been a journeyman in this league for about 7 seasons. He started in place and then primarily played in the base defense in place of Dorsey and got his first career sack on Monday night against the Patriots. And another banged-up guy the Chiefs have is John McGraw, who's he's been a reserve safety for several years here, but once Eric Berry was lost for the season, his role escalated for this team, and he's kind of the veteran leader, and he's been nursing a shoulder injury since the October 31st game on Monday Night Football against the San Diego Chargers. He's been kind of he's been inactive for 2 games and active for 1 since then. He was inactive this last Monday night against the Patriots. Those are probably the 2 biggest injuries, and then obviously all the guys they've lost throughout the year, Matt Castle, Tony Moyaki, Jamal Charles, Eric Berry. Those 4 guys, obviously, are injury situation, but they've been placed on IR.
Certainly. Ryan Lilja, the left guard, did...
I left him out. Yeah, he looks like he got knocked a little loopy after the interception. Boy, he took a hit, and, yeah, that's the status. We'll just have to wait and see. Todd Haley said in his Tuesday press comments that he thought that Lilja would bounce back and be okay. It's officially a head/neck injury, so you never know with those and the clearance. So, yes, it's a good point. And Lilja, sorry to cut you off, but I left him out. He was injured in that game on Monday night.
Gotcha. I went back last night and rewatched the game on NFL Game Rewind online. And, you know, despite the score, I mean, if you look at the scoreboard and if you didn't watch the game at all, you would swear, oh, well, that's just the Patriots blowing out the Chiefs there, you know, 34-3. But, you know, when you go back and watch the game again, I thought the Chiefs really, you know, they had their opportunities. In fact, I think they had the ball in the Patriots' end of the field 8 or 9 times. It seemed like the interceptions and penalties all happened kind of in those situations, and that's where the kind of errors were. And, of course, you know, the interceptions, you know, I know didn't help. But this was a game that, and I think the Chiefs even owned the time of possession in that game. So, you know, there was a lot of, you know, would you say there was a lot of good that came out of that game with Palco starting his first, you know, making his first start?
Well, I think there's no doubt it's going to be a good game experience for Palco, and especially if he's going to be the starter this weekend against Pittsburgh. I know it's a game that means a ton to him. He's a hometown guy, played at Pitt, even played for the Steelers there for a brief period in 2009, or didn't play, was on the roster, though, for 2 games when Roethlisberger and Batch were out. And he's this kid, Tyler Palco, we can get to him later, but he's such an impressive guy from his work ethic, and it was such a feel-good story to get to that start after 5 years of kind of just drifting without a paddle, so to speak, for a number of years. But as far as the game goes, you know, there's no moral victories in the NFL, but with that said, yes, the score, it showed the small margin of error you have when you play a team like the New England Patriots, and like this week when the Chiefs play a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Chiefs can compete, I feel, if they play their best with the best in this league. They're a resilient bunch, and although they've been depleted by injuries and the talent level, this is a team that doesn't pack it up. They're going to play hard. Now, and in that game against New England, it was 3-0 for a while, and it was 10-3 at halftime, and they had done a whole lot of different things as far as we saw a hurry-up offense that they went exclusively to with Palco. We saw more blitz packages from Romeo Crennel. We saw pre-snap coverage, just disguising coverages pre-snap. They really focused on that through the week, and we even saw a page from the Broncos playbook from a wide receiver that hadn't been active in weeks. Jeremy Irvin was running the zone read option. He was a scout team quarterback the week before playing Tim Tebow, and they said activate him and have him run some options. So the Chiefs did a number of different things, but as you said, the 8 times they crossed the 50-yard line, Dave, 8 times, and they got 3 points out of those 8 trips. And you mentioned interceptions, you mentioned penalties. Well, every single one of those 8 drives either had a penalty, a turnover, or a sack involved, and that is exactly why they were unable to convert those trips into points. The one thing that's plagued this defense all season long is the big play. New England was able to break some big plays. You had a 52-yard Gronkowski touchdown. You had a 19-yard Gronkowski touchdown. You had several other chunk yardage plays, and all adds up to 34-0 in New England. Yeah, 34 unanswered points for the Patriots in that game after the Chiefs took a 3-0 lead.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought they did a good job defensively, too. You know, you talked about the big play. The Chiefs have given up, I think it's like 42 explosive plays on defense now, but they only allowed two big plays the other night against New England. And you know, that's something that the Steelers made sure when they played the Patriots was to, you know, try to make Tom Brady do all the short stuff, and they played a lot of man dime. For a change against Brady there. And I thought that the Chiefs really did a good job of limited Tom Brady. I mean, let's face it, Brady was only 15 or 27. Unfortunately, you can't take out those big plays from those stats. But, you know, outside of that, I thought they were able to get pressure on him too. And I think that's one of the things outside of Tom Bahali, you know, who leads the team in sacks and all, if they're able to keep up getting that pressure like they had against the Patriots, I think they might have a little bit of success against the Steelers in that area.
Yeah, the pressure is a big thing that's been missing the past few weeks, and they had three sacks in the first 20, 25 minutes of play on Monday night. And Tom Bahali, obviously, this is a guy that it seems like he's getting held all the time, and the fans go crazy about it. And sometimes it's called, sometimes it's not. He's the leader of the defense as far as the pass rush goes, and I think he's done a very, very good season, even though his sack totals aren't up where they were a year ago. You look at that game, and really it was a disastrous third quarter is what happened as well to the Chiefs. New England gets the ball after the half. They do what they do, 9 plays, 85 yards. They score. The Chiefs go 3 and out, punt, and it's probably turned for a touchdown. They get the ball back, interception. Patriots put up more points, 17 in the third quarter, 17-0 Patriots after being 10-3 at the half. Now, the one thing with big plays that's kind of haunted the Chiefs all year, for your Steelers fans out there that are looking for their fantasy football plays, take a look at Heath Miller. The Chiefs last year, when they were going up against pass-catching tight ends, Eric Berry would play the man coverage against those guys. And with Eric Berry not in the lineup, the Chiefs have really struggled at times to defend pass-catching tight ends this season. And Gronkowski is as good as there is. And he had a big night against the Chiefs. In fact, between him and Hernandez, I believe they got 14 of Brady's, 28, 27 passes he attempted. So Brady was trying to go towards his tight ends. Matt Stafford did the same thing when with Pettigrew and with Scheffler earlier this season. And even Randy McMichael, when he was filling in for Antonio Gates with San Diego, has had some good games against the Chiefs this season. So I think Heath Miller is kind of the underrated guy that the Chiefs are going to have to find an answer for. You hear about here in-house, you hear about already, you know, Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, Hines Ward's due for a catch. You got to respect him. But look at Heath Miller, too. The Chiefs are trying to find a way that they can defend tight ends without their guy that was so key in doing that last season.
Do you think, though, I was going to note that it seems like the linebacker play is probably what's kind of hurt the Chiefs maybe the most, you know, outside the injuries, of course, and all. Do you think that they're going to cover Heath with a safety in this situation, or do you think they'll let, you know, one of the linebackers follow him around?
Well, you know, first of all, I disagree with the linebacker play being poor for the Chiefs. I think Derek Johnson's having the best season he's had of his career. The guy's everywhere. If you watch Monday night in that loss, he still stood up as a guy on the defense who was all over the place. I think it's an all-pro year for Derek Johnson, and if he doesn't make his first Pro Bowl, it's an absolute travesty. The guy has been the heart and soul of this defense and is turning in a career season. With that said, how are they going to defend Heath Miller down the scene? You know, the Chiefs have played a lot of different sub-packages. We've seen a lot of dimes and nickels. Sometimes you'll see 6 defensive backs on the field, 3 of them being safeties. And so they typically try to go with the safety. Occasionally you'll see a linebacker matched up on a tight end, but it seems to me when the Chiefs are going in their man that a lot of times the backers are matched up on the running backs and the safeties, especially the sub-package safeties, try and get up on those tight ends. So I wouldn't anticipate seeing linebackers. They typically like to have those guys free and see if Derek Johnson can make some plays.
Yeah, I should have prefaced that by I didn't mean to. I shouldn't have thrown Derek Johnson into that, because even looking at some of the stuff on Pro Football Focus too, He is having a great season there. So my apologies on that. And Holly too, Tom Holly. Yeah, I kind of class him more as a defensive end, even though he does drop sometimes and play the linebacker role. So yeah, props to you on that. Derek Johnson has had a good season there. Kind of moving forward, how do the Steelers, you know, outside of, you mentioned Heath Miller. You know, and with Ben with his thumb this week, you know, and Ben likes to wear these things like badges of courage. You know, he does not hide his injuries. He makes sure everybody knows about him. And heading into a nationally televised game, Ben's doing exactly what Steeler Nation comes to expect here. That being said, would they be best suited to try to run at the middle of the Chiefs front, or do you expect Ben to come out throwing?
Well, I don't know. I know that the last time the Chiefs played the Steelers, the blueprint for Kansas City's victory, and this was 2009 when the Chiefs won the transition year, first year under Scott Pioli, Todd Haley, 4-12. Steelers obviously won 8-8 that year, but they were Super Bowl champions the season before. Zig Ben had a heck of a day through the air, and I think the Chiefs won that game for several factors. One was Mendenhall had only about 3.8 yards per carry. The Steelers as a whole rushed, I believe, 31 times, only got 3.7 yards per pop on the ground. The Chiefs were able to get a special teams touchdown in there. They did pick off Big Ben twice. It was Andy Studebaker, one of those linebackers, making his first career start in place of Mike Vrabel. And so they won the turnover hours, and they did some things nicely. Now, I don't know. The Steelers are so many weapons. It's tough to say where are they best going. You know, both of the corners for the Chiefs are having pretty strong seasons, and Flowers and Carr, while the back line, as I said, is kind of one in transition without a Pro Bowler as a rookie, Eric Berry. I don't know what the thoughts are about him outside of kind of the Chiefs region and the Chiefs circle, but Eric Berry played every single defensive snap for the team last year as a rookie, made a Pro Bowl as a rookie, and just an amazing player, and it really it became a leader of the defensive unit at such a young age, and that injury has kind of, you can only place Eric Berry with one guy. The Chiefs have tried to figure out different ways, different patterns in a rotation of players to replace him at that strong position. Run defense has been an issue at times for the Chiefs, but then they'll come back with a game where they stop good runners. I mean, Oakland, you go back to that game, a great running attack, and the end numbers, the end game, if you look at the stat book, you'll show that Raiders average like 5 yards a carry. They had a couple long runs, but the Chiefs, for the most part, stuck it to the Raiders. They stopped them 4 straight times inside the 2-yard line on the goal-to-go situation. So it's a team that has been able to stop the run. And I guess when you play the Steelers, that's what you have to do first. But, boy, the Steelers have so many weapons. And, where they find their success, I don't know. I think it's how the Chiefs going to stop them. This is the better question.
Right. And offensively for the Chiefs, regardless of who starts, whether it be Palco or Orton this week, do you expect them to lean more on this kind of running back by committee with Jones and McCluster and Battle, who all, you know, they had very balanced carries the other night and had some good rushing yardage there, you know, and we talked about it was just a stupid errors on the Patriots side of the field that kind of shot them in the foot there. And, you know, you mentioned about the tight end issue on, you know, covering Heath Miller, and all the Steelers have had their problems with tight ends at times this year as well too, and most notably against the Ravens with Dixon and Pitta over there. Could we expect to see the tight end being used more? I think they only have two on their active roster right now, the Chiefs, and I don't know about the other one behind Pope. I know a little bit about Pope, but Jake O'Connell, is he more of a blocking tight end or is he more of a pass catching tight end?
They'll both run routes. If you have to label them, I would label them both more as blocking tight ends. Jake's kind of the flex guy who can play a little fullback, block on the edge, line up as kind of a flanker and do some lead up blocks. Pope obviously looks like an extra tackle. He's 6'8" and 270 pounds, and both have been involved in the pass game at times this year, but neither are going to take a game over. That was what Tony Moyaki does for the Chiefs, and he blew his ACL out in the final preseason game. So he was their pass threat, and those two guys are more of the blocking tight ends as far as the Chiefs go. In the run game, you're right, and against New England, the running backs had a very good game. You had Thomas Jones averaging 6 yards per carry, Dexter McCutcheon 5, Jackie Battle 4, you know, and the Chiefs started playing from behind, and that obviously eliminates your run game. But it seemed like going in the hurry-up offense really helped Thomas Jones. I don't know what it was. He struggled to break open and free on some runs this year, especially compared to last season and the first 8 or so games he had. But it was like he found the fountain of youth, so to speak, against New England. And the fast pace, he just looked like a different player. And hopefully that continues for this Chiefs team. And, you know, if you're looking at for matchups and as far as the passing game goes, I like the Chiefs' three receivers are guys that they can go forward with for a long time. You have Pro Bowler Dwayne Bowe. You've got Jonathan Baldwin, who's an ultra-athletic rookie. You guys know plenty of from being out there in Pittsburgh. And you've got Steve Breaston, who's the speedster that they got in free agency with the Cardinals. So those are the three guys that are going to be the real receiving threats.
Good info as always. It's a little early in the week. Do you care to throw out a prediction yet, or do you want to tease something for the site or something like that?
Well, I tell you what, you can follow us on KCChiefs.com throughout the week, and we'll try and cover it all. I'll just say this about the Steelers. I look at the Steelers team, and it's a team that, to me, they've got Super Bowl written all over them. That's how I feel about the Steelers. I think they're the best team, not only in the AFC, but I think they may be the best team in all of the NFL. Just from what I've seen, the fact that they're 7-3 and have a -10 turnover ratio is absolutely incredible. That tells me that they are a team that can overcome what is the bugaboo of every NFL team. It doesn't matter who you are. If you turn the ball over, if you're not given the turnover margin, you don't win games in this league. But the Steelers find ways to win football games at being -10. I looked at that and just popped out, and I really like the Steelers. For the Chiefs to win this one, they'll obviously enter as heavy underdogs. It's going to take how they beat the Steelers as heavy underdogs in 09. It'll take some turnovers. It'll take maybe a return score or a defensive touchdown. But I'll guarantee you one thing, the Chiefs will play hard in this ball game. As far as putting a score on it, you know, I'll decline on that and just let you know the Steelers team is a team that I'm really impressed with from afar, from watching the league as a whole.
Good stuff. And listeners, you can follow, plenty of time to follow Josh on Twitter at Josh Looney, one word. The KC Twitter account is KC Chiefs, right?
Yep, KC Chiefs. If you're Steelers fans coming to the game on Sunday, definitely follow that KC Chiefs, because during the week, you'll get links to all our videos and our stories and stuff, but on game day, they'll help you out with traffic patterns to the stadium, which gates have backups, all that good stuff that can help out your trip. So if you're a Steelers fan, I think it's worth at least Saturday and Sunday following that KC Chiefs, and you can do whatever you want after that. But if you come to the game, it's a great tool for you.
Well, Josh, I certainly do appreciate you joining us on a terrible podcast on Thanksgiving Eve. And, your work is awesome. You've been with on that site for quite a few years, and I'm familiar with your work, and you do an awesome job covering your team. Want to wish you and your family happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for joining the show again, and good luck to you this weekend.
I appreciate it, Dave, and happy holidays and Thanksgiving to everybody out there in Steeler Nation.